Hello and welcome back to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Nuttall, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur. So Aaron, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well, Joe, to be honest. Yeah, it's been a nice day here in Warwickshire. The weather's been a nice mild 11 degrees. The sun's been out. There's been no rain. So yeah, that's got me in a decent mood. Spring's on its way. And of course, the cricket season as well, which is promising to be absolutely fantastic in 2021. And then, of course, today with the pink ball test, maybe not as good from an English perspective. What do we have? A 13-run lead over India wasn't the greatest of days with the bats. In fact, it was England's lowest ever first innings total in India. But with that being said, we've still got hope. Jack Leach at the end of the day removing the massive, massive wicket of Virat Kohli. So we remain optimistic. There's still some hope in us yet. There's still some fight in the Three Lions. But yeah, it's not looking great in Ahmedabad. But to answer your original question, Joe, from a personal perspective, absolutely fine, mate. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm just pretty disappointed with how England played. It's not great, is it really?
Not ideal.
Yeah, like you say, just so frustrating, obviously, from the position England were in the first test.
And in this one, let's not forget, we were 74 for two. And then we went...
Yeah, and well, even from the toss, they won the toss and batted. Everyone said bat first, and they do that and get skittered for 112 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, that honestly, that is the most England thing ever, isn't it? Like no other national side in the world is doing that. Like only England would do that. But yeah, like you said, it's still 4 days to go.
Exactly. You still got to remain optimistic. Okay, we're down, but we're
say
not
this
out.
on day three when India is still batting and still haven't lost a wicket.
Well, if that happens, it happens, doesn't it? Okay. At the end of the day, Test cricket, the winner is those who play the better cricket. So if that happens, so be it. But England can't give up hope. Okay, that 7 wickets more if we can get them out for around 200-250. Still in this game.
Yeah. And then when we're effectively none for five or something like that, then we'll maybe have a rethink about that. But yeah, that's pretty much enough on Test cricket today. We are also joined by a special guest today. I'm delighted to welcome along Hampshire's Joe Weatherly. So Joe, how are you doing?
Hey guys, how you doing? Yeah, all good. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to having a bit of a chinwag and a chat.
No worries. Yeah, so we've got a lot of different things to be discussing today. We're going to be talking about some of your early cricketing memories and your early cricketing journey, as well as your, you know, your time with Hampshire so far. And then we're going to end things off by, as ever, when we have a current professional cricketer on, rather than someone who's retired, with a little bit of teammates, which is we brought that back into play a bit more now because we've not really been doing that recently. But it's made a bit of a comeback, so we will get to that at the end. But yeah, let's get going, really. So, Joe, let's start right at the beginning of your cricketing journey, almost. What are some of your first ever memories of cricket, playing or watching?
Definitely watching 05 Ashes. I was born in 1997, so I was 8 with the 2005 Ashes, which was just, looking back at it, you know, just the perfect timing. I don't know, you know, children of today can start really, really young, you know, like 5, 6, 7, whatever, with the plastic bats or sponge balls. I actually couldn't start any earlier than that. So I didn't really know what cricket was before that 05 series. And I don't know, just captured my imagination. I've got an older brother. So we'd sort of watch the day's play and then go out in the garden. And, you know, just he, as the older brother, he would do most of the batting, sorry. And just got curious about cricket from then on, really. There's a local cricket club just down the road. I'd often just drive by and just ask mum and dad, you know, what's that all about? And got just really interested in it. Dad was a professional tennis player. So I guess the sporting gene was there. And I was always, you know, just loved anything hand-eye based. You know, just hitting any sort of ball, catching balls. So I guess I had that from my old man. And then cricket was the one that just sort of, yeah, just caught my imagination. Just love watching, you know, just that series, Warne, Ponting, Truscothick. I think a lot of people my age would probably say a similar thing. Like that series was just class.
Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, in that series, Joe, if you had to choose one moment, I know there were so many iconic moments. Edgbaston, for example, that spell that Flintoff did to Ponting, McGrath getting 500 wickets by dismissing Truscothick at Lord's. If you had to choose one moment from the 2005 Ashes, what do you say was the real highlight for you personally?
I would say KP at the Oval, Warne dropping him, and then And then actually that spell where Leeds was pulled about 150 mile an hour, and KP just, he got wrapped on the glove, didn't he? And then he just sort of started taking him on and just kept depositing him over like fine leg, just ball after ball. What was it, 158? I reckon that, as you say though, like so many amazing moments, like Flintoff's over to Langer, Ponting's innings at Old Trafford. I sound like a right cricket Norse, Jesus, but
nothing wrong with
what
that.
A series. Like, yeah. I mean, that just is just so good. And I've still got the, not that I've watched it for a while, the box set of the highlights now.
Oh, well, there's nothing wrong with that. It's an iconic series, isn't it? And yeah, you mentioned that partnership. Peterson at the Oval, absolutely iconic. At the other end, of course, Ashley Giles doing the Bear and Ragged Staff proud at the Oval. What a partnership that was. And then, yeah, the iconic scene of the umpires flicking the bails off and England securing the Ashes. It was an iconic series. Unfortunately, just before our time, wasn't it, Joe, with regards to us watching it live? Yeah. In fact, both of us, 2009 Ashes, which, to be honest, was not a bad series in itself, was it, with the great escape in Cardiff. Flintoff as well, his final game at the Oval. But yeah, what do you say was your highlight from 2005, Joe? I know obviously we didn't watch it live, but
honestly, I recommend Gary Pratt ran out Ricky Ponting. That was that was for sheer comedy. That was, yeah, that was a great cricketing funny moment. And then Ponting, you know, walking into the pavilion at the end, or I say at the end when he got out, you know, just like cussing. Well, not cussing, but I don't know the word.
He was just fuming, wasn't he?
Just annoyed at the fact that Gary Pratt had run him out, really. It's just that's one
of
the
best. Can you imagine how smug you'd be if you were Duncan Fletcher? Just, sitting there, glasses on, just like, you know, just got Ponting out, like, how good's that? And he's having a go at you just down below. Just sit there smugly, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's a great moment.
It is, but it really is. That was the thing with that. I remember it was on one of the Ashes documentaries that they did. I think it was the one for Channel 4. And I think Michael Vaughan said that they kept on doing that 12th man rotation because the bowlers were genuinely tired. And of course, Simon Jones was injured. But at the same time, Ponting didn't actually realise that. And he thought, oh, they're just having breaks and rests and they're coming back fully fresh and refreshed to take him on. And yeah, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, per se. But yeah, what a moment. Good choice there, Joe. Very, very nice choice. I mean, for me personally, it has to be Edgbaston, of course. That two-run win over the Aussies, absolutely iconic.
Yeah, yeah.
And that catch from Geraint Jones at the end. Didn't get old.
Yeah, so I just had some great moments and arguably the best ever Ashes series, certainly from a neutral perspective and an England perspective.
What about 2019?
Well, yeah, 2019 was a good series, but England didn't win the Ashes. So I guess it's then swings and roundabouts, isn't it? For sheer entertainment, 2019 arguably is up there, but yeah, well, I mean, 2005 undoubtedly still one of the best ever Ashes series.
Well, I suppose one of us here has actually watched both live. So, Joe, if I had to ask you, what would you say was better, 2005 or 2019? Which would be better in your humble opinion?
Do you know what gets it for me is when we talk about 05, we've got what, like 10, 12 different moments that we could pick out as like unbelievable. The 2019. I mean, obviously, Stokes, Headingley, that's what my mind's drawn to. But even though we're 2 years on now, apart from that, I can't pick out as
maybe
many.
The Stokes is Headingley one.
I can.
As a whole.
I can.
Like, worse the others. Because like in 2005, it was really just like loads of little good moments or smaller good moments, like individual pieces. Obviously, Stokes was still individual, but the length it lasted for. And the feat he has to achieve, maybe that equates to it. I don't know.
I guess Jofra at Lords.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. To Smith. Yeah. It was, and that was the thing. For me, there were quite a few moments in there. I think Denley's catch as well. That was absolutely stunning at Lords. Brook's catch as well in the last one at the Oval.
Burns' catch. Great catch.
Yeah, very, very good catch. Burns' century as well at Edgbaston. Of course, Steve Smith running the show for the Aussies. Marnus coming up. It's a concussion sub.
Jay Roy throwing a bit of entertainment there with the bat. But yeah, I mean, as we've said there, we've just reeled off some great moments from both series. So it genuinely is an interesting debate that which series is better. But I guess from an Aussie perspective, it has to be 2019 because they retain the Ashes. But from an England, from a sheer entertainment perspective, who knows? Yeah, who knows? It's interesting. But moving the conversation back onto yourself then, Joe, you mentioned in 2005, there were some real standout players for you. You know, the likes of Trescothick was one of them. Is there anyone else aside from, you know, those guys, maybe of that era, anyone else who really stands out to you as being somebody you looked up to as a cricket fan growing up?
Not explicitly. No one I sort of had like role modelled my game on or... But having said that, I just remember just the batters. You know, I was talking to my dad today actually just about you know, Lara, Ponting, Sangakkara, Jayawardena, Trescothick, Callis, and there just seemed to be just a generation of just like great players. And you know, going back to comparing 05 and 19, I think it's just the age in which the series catches your imagination. I don't necessarily think of the players today in that same bracket. Having said that, like Williamson, Smith, Coley, Root, whatever, are unbelievable. But I think it's just the age in which the game gets you. And I just remember that, you know, just watching Lara and Tendulkar bat just inspired me so much. Hopefully, and well, definitely as Coley and Root, etc., are doing to today's youth, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, and Joe, I have to ask a difficult question there because you just mentioned two absolute gun cricketers. Sachin Tendulkar, the leading test run scorer of all time, the little master, a man who's revered as a god in the country of India. And then, of course, Brian Charles Lara, the prince, the seventh leading test run scorer of all time, the man with the highest ever first class score, of course, at Warwickshire County Cricket Club, 501 outs against Durham, and the highest ever individual test score as well in Antigua. If you had to choose one of those guys to bat, okay, in a Dream 11, who would you choose and why?
We
got him.
That's a good question, isn't it? Yeah. I'm going to say, if I had to choose someone to bat for my life, Sachin. If I could only watch one batter play for the rest of my life, if I had to watch someone, I'd pick Lara. So I'll sit on the fence.
Tough question, that. It's a very, very tough question.
If that makes sense. I think Sachin would probably score more runs and he's prolific. And I'd want him to bat for my life. But if I had to watch someone, I think Brian Charles Lara, right up there. Yeah.
Well answered. Very democratic, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, that is a hard... What would you go for, Aaron? What would you go for? Because that's a super hard question.
I knew this would happen. That's why I was a bit apprehensive to actually ask it.
You're probably going to say Lara because you obviously play for Warwickshire.
Because of the Warwickshire connection. But then again, I do remember 2010, Sachin Tendulkar's double century against South Africa in Gwalior at the Captain Roop Singh Stadium, which I don't think has actually hosted an international match since. So that would be an interesting one. For me, in terms of, again, I'd have to answer that exactly like Joe did. I'd have to answer it in the exact same way. If you're talking about someone batting in terms of technique-wise, in terms of being a prolific run scorer to quote-unquote save your life or save an innings, I'd go Sachin Tendulkar. But in terms of if I could see one of them produce the goods in international cricket or indeed for Warwickshire, got to go with the Prince, Brian Charles Lara. Imagine seeing a 501 not out. I mean, I can't imagine how brilliant that would have been, how awe-inspiring and spectacular that would have been for the fans at Edgbaston in 1994. So yeah, again, I'd have to answer that very, very democratically. And at the end of the day, both incredible cricketers. Absolutely legendary.
It's not really, it's a win-win really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And actually, I've got another tough one. We'll go this in terms of cover drives now, boys. Who has the better cover drive? Ian Bell or Kumar Sangakkara?
Kumar Sangakkara, without a doubt. Well, undoubtedly for
Ian
me.
Bell.
Well, one of the
I say that because I just think left-handers always have... Like, left-handers always look nicer to watch, regardless of who it is. Maybe with the exception of Babar Azam, I think all left-handers, and James Vince, currently, I think all left-handers who are playing right now have a better cover drive than right-handers, with literally the exception of those two, I would say.
What about Ian Bell, though? Oh, my word.
But Ian Bell was obviously poetry a great cover motion. Driver, but yeah, but Sangakkara is just... Well, A, Sangakkara is class, and B, he's a left-hander who plays a very, very good cover drive. So, for me, I would have to go for Sangakkara. Again, it's a hard one again.
It is a tough one. And of course, for the listeners out there, please let us know at the County Cricket 2 on Twitter. Who would you rather have in terms of one cover drive? You've got one more cover drive that you can see from these guys. Would you go Ian Bell or Kumar Sangakkara? It's a difficult one, but a question that needs to be answered in the cricketing fraternity.
It will be a good debate. Again, it makes for a good debate. And as I say, both two class players, really. But for me, I would have to go Sangakkara. But yeah. Each their own, I guess. Each their own.
Exactly.
But let's let's change the conversation again back onto yourself, Joe, and let's talk now a little bit about county cricket. So what are some of your first ever memories of county cricket? What do you remember right from the start?
So I'm a Hampshire boy through and through, came through the sort of age groups from under nines, lived in Winchester all my lived in Hampshire all my life. So I just remember following Hampshire. I think the club had a lot of white ball success around 2010. And I just remember going to some of those games. I remember, Aaron probably won't like me to raise this, but the,
I know what it is.
The 40 over final, I can't remember what year it was.
2012, yep, Neil Carter, yep, Kabir Ali.
2012, yeah, yep. So I was there, probably quite sunburnt in the Compton stand, at about, I don't know, 12, 13 years old, and I remember that quite vividly. Yeah, that was a pretty good game, wasn't it? I just remember the Warwickshire glum faces on the, I don't mean to sound harsh, but just those faces on the balcony. We've in our dining room, we've still got pictures of that that day, like all over our dining room, like hung up. So I think that's maybe where I remember it so vividly. But yeah, I was there. So that was a fond memory as a Hampshire fan. So sorry, Aaron.
No issues with that at all. I mean, that's the thing. We all have our own affinities and connections. Rub it in sometimes. Nothing wrong with that from a personal perspective. But what a final that was. I mean, obviously heartbreaking for us. Fortunately, we went on to win it in 2016. Obviously not the CB40 anymore, but the Royal London One Day Cup. But yeah, that was an absolutely extraordinary Lords final, wasn't it? And that final delivery from Kabir Ali. Because that's the thing with Neil Carter, okay, is one of our greatest ever T20 players. And yet, unfortunately, that's what he's remembered for in a Bears shirt, for not hitting that full toss. And
we were actually talking, because we've got Keith Barker, as you know, at Hampshire now. And we were talking about that game, because Keith was obviously at Warwickshire. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that game the other day. And am I right in saying Neil Carter was awesome at this sort of pick-up sweep shot?
Yes. He was. That's the thing. But Neil Carter was an absolute gun. Like, the fact earlier that season, Bart
was saying that there was obviously a couple to win and that Hampshire brought the field up, but they left like a fine leg, like just out.
Vacant,
yeah. And Barks was just saying that maybe threw him, because it was a genuine like knee-high full toss, wasn't it?
Yep.
That he just missed. Amazing, amazing take. But like, we were just discussing that obviously Carts were, you know, amazing player. But just that fine leg that maybe he was looking for that sweep shot. But really, he got the ball that he wanted, I guess.
I know. That's the thing. Honestly, like, I'd love to have Neil on the podcast to discuss that day and, of course, his Warwickshire career in general. But it is one of those iconic finals. And obviously, Warwickshire won the wrong end of the result that day. But, I mean, even just if you're neutral, what a game that would have been to watch. And, of course, for Hampshire fans such as yourself, Joe, what a day and what a final. And that's the thing. It's going to be a shame without Lords Finals, isn't it, now, in the 50 over? Because Lords Finals, there's an air of anticipation. They're special days. They're ones that you remember basically for the rest of your life.
Maybe they should host Finals Day.
Very funny. Although, to be honest, I think Finals Day's found its permanent home now.
Oh, no, I'm only joking. Obviously, I'm only joking. I like Finals Day fast enough.
Good lad. Yeah. Who doesn't?
Also, that's not to take anything away from Trent Bridge either, hosting 50 over Finals, because Trent Bridge is a great venue. But it's not quite Lords, is it?
The thing about Lords, okay, maybe this is because we have a bit of a North Group perspective, but it's going down to Lords. It's the day out.
Special, yeah.
Because you don't usually go down to London for a
cricket
game.
It's not the FA Cup, isn't it?
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
100%. It's an occasion. It's something which is special. You make a day out of it. Whereas for me, I've been to Nottingham quite often. I love Nottingham. I love going to Trent Bridge, also the City Ground. If Notts Forest are playing and I've got nothing to do. So it's a nice place to watch some football. But in terms of just the occasion and the day itself, I suppose just because I've been there a lot more. Whereas with London, Lords, St. John's Wood, it's just a special place to... Well, it's the home of cricket, isn't it, really? So, yeah, but it will be interesting. Of course, Trent Bridge has got a good atmosphere. So, yeah, who knows? Who knows? Maybe we'll...
From a player's perspective, I just think lock in the Lords final for the 50-over comp. Lock in Edgbaston for the T20. Yes. I just... Why confuse it? You know, it's definitely, you know, just Lords, that special, that feeling. And, yeah, Edgbaston do it so well. You know, when that Holly stand gets a bit rowdy, nothing better.
Absolutely. World-renowned atmosphere at Edgbaston. cricket ground. And of course, for all the listeners out there, once you get your opportunity, go. It's definitely on the bucket list for a lot of cricket fans. It's definitely worth it. Absolutely fantastic atmosphere at Edgbaston, unlike anywhere else in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. But yeah, talking of county cricket then, Joe, let's talk about your Hampshire debut then, because obviously you made that in 2016 at the Rose Bowl. What do you remember from your debut for Hampshire? Obviously your boyhood club as well. How special of an occasion was that for you?
It was definitely special. If I'm brutally honest, it was a wet, cold, early season uni game at the Cheers Bowl. And it was, don't get me wrong, it was really special. But I think Dale Benkenstein was our head coach that year. And it was a game where we'd played our pre-season games 2 or 3 weeks prior. And it was the week before the first county championship main sort of proper game of the season. And I just remember the team wasn't quite full strength, let's just say that. And so it was different. I mean, look, making your Hampshire debut, making your first class debut for anyone is special, and especially for my boyhood club. But I do remember it being particularly fresh and cold. But still fond memories.
Oh, of course, yeah. And of course, the game itself must have been incredibly special. As you said, it's your boyhood club. I did just have a couple of questions from that day, however. First of all, Joe, do you remember how many you scored on your Hampshire debut?
I think I got runs. And I want to say 83, maybe?
Spot on.
No way, that is...
That's a good memory.
That's genuinely a complete hunch, and I'm not laughing my way through that at all. But I just remember reading something on Twitter like a week or two afterwards, just saying it would have been, I don't know, the sixth Hampshire debutant to make 100 on debut. But it was, yeah. I got out to the off spinner, slug one up in the air on a green zimmer. So,
well, yeah. That was my second question. Do you remember who actually got you out?
Yeah. Yeah, no, some off spinner that I sort of eyes got too big and thought I could hit out of Southampton. He got wickets, I know that. I think he got a 5 for or something similar, but yeah.
I'll give you a clue, Joe. No, he did. He got 6 wickets in this game. I wrote it down because he currently plays for my county of Warwickshire. Do you know who it was? If I gave you the initials,
oh, no
AT.
Way. Thompson.
Alex Thompson, yeah.
Alex Thompson, yeah. Wow. I didn't put 2 and 2 together there, because I don't know Alex Thompson that well, but I obviously know he plays for Warwickshire, but I didn't know that he had sort of progressed through. That's amazing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. To be fair, had a decent year for us last year, Alex Thompson. I mean, to be fair, we've got 3 good spinners now in Lintott, Briggs and Thompson. But yeah, that's quite interesting. I found that very, very interesting that he got you out in that game. But yeah, 83 from 123 balls, not the worst of debuts at all, Joe. But in terms of your entire time at Hampshire now, you've had 5 years at the Southern Club. What do you say has been your real highlights? Of course, 2018 with the Royal London One Day Cup. You've also had many centuries along the way. What do you say has been your real highlight from your time down at the Rose Bowl so far?
Yeah, I mean, quite easily that 2018 final. Or that whole comp, actually. We played quite a homegrown squad. Obviously, Hampshire... We've had some really great overseas signings over the last sort of 5 years, some real big names. It's been like an absolute pleasure to play with them. But I just remember that 50-over squad. I think we were really competing in the 4-day comp and the T20. And we played quite a homegrown, quite youngish squad. You know, senior players like Liam Dawson, James Vince, Chris Wood, but then also myself, Lewis McManus, Tom Alsop, Brad Taylor. Just like a real feel-good, you know, we were really playing for each other that comp. We just got on a run. Everyone contributed. Like I can't remember anyone having an outstanding comp, or everyone contributed at the right time. Got through to the final, and just like we talk about Lord's Finals, an amazing blue sky day, like one of those just amazing summer's days. And everything just went right that day. We got off to a great start with the bat. I think we were maybe 60 for none off the first 10 overs power play. And just from that moment on, that just sort of settled the changing room, and just everything went right. And my sort of obviously first final with the club, my first trophy with the club, and just doing it with a lot of my mates was just really special. I will say though, you know, we reached the final the following year, 2019, against Somerset, and although we lost, I'm actually really glad that I had that experience in 2019 when we lost, just to see the other side of it, because you know, losing finals is tough, and you know, just going to the changing rooms or going to the hotel after, and it's pretty bleak, and you have a drink, and you might have a drink with the opposition and sort of congratulate them, but just to really appreciate what winning actually meant and felt like when you've lost one as well, just made that year before really cool. But no, definitely, I mean, you want to win trophies for your boyhood club, so that 2018 win was awesome.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that about the occasion of Lords final. We've already spoken about it plenty in this podcast, but when you're going out into the middle in 2018, I mean, the team was already in a strong position at this point, but what's going through your head? You're walking out onto the hallowed turf of the home of cricket in a final to win a trophy for your boyhood club. What's going through your head at that moment?
Well, I spent about 4 or 5, but as a young player, we were going so well, I slipped down the order to about 7. So James Vince was sort of like, Dawson, Bergie are going to go in before you. So just sort of slipped down. I think I got 100 in the game before or something. So I was pretty pissed off at that stage, actually. But no, walking down the stairs, it's just like going down those stairs in the pavilion, and it's sort of you're in your own bubble, in your own thoughts, and then long room, and then walking out, and you've got the camera sort of in your face, blue sky, packed house, just thinking, wowzers, like this is pretty awesome. I remember from that day, actually, I was quite close with Sam Northeast. He just left Kent. And he got booed onto the park because it was quite controversial. Obviously, Kent were in the final. He'd left Kent the year before. And, you know, it was a decent crowd that day. And he still talks about just not sleeping, you know, the week before, getting booed. And, yeah, it's a bit of a surreal. There were definitely more Kent fans than Hampshire fans, for sure.
I think you can tell that by watching the highlights again when you listen to the Kent crowd. And that's the thing, though. With regards to a Lords final, they are just incredible occasions for fans as well. Let's not forget, obviously, for the players, it's the personal moment, but for fans, they do stick with you. They stick with you forever, basically. And they are ingrained in the club's history. So they're massive, massive occasions. But, Joe, just wanted to ask you about this in 2018. What about your dismissal to Joe Denley? How are you feeling after that? She walked off after just 2 balls.
Yeah, I was a bit frustrated. I didn't think it was out at the time, and it was a... it was actually a really nice ball. It sort of pitched on leg, spun, hit me in front of off, and would have hit sort of top of off. And I just remember thinking, this is the 44th over, and he's just bowled an absolute beauty. Do you know what? I would definitely take getting naught and winning 100 times. And I'm not just saying that, but to win was class, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But bloody Joe Denley, I've been at Kent the year before, know him well. And it was at the time where he was just sort of starting to bowl a bit more. It was one of those that sort of bowled a lot in nets. It was always sort of saying, oh, I'm going to bowl more in matches and wanting the captain to give him. And then he just bowled really well. They had a great year, didn't he? I think he was player of the year or something. And got me out, a little rat.
Did have a good year that year. And he got Joss Butler out in the T20 quarterfinal at Canterbury in like, it was like the third boy. I think it either went dot 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 wicket or dot dot wicket, and he got him out stumped, if I remember rightly. And that wasn't good because I then thought Lance were going to lose. Obviously they didn't. They lost to the semis instead. But that's kind of when he really started to come through with his, like, his bowling started to break through, because then he took, what was it, like 4 for in Sri Lanka that winter. Was it 4 for? Yeah, it's like 4 for 15 or something ridiculous like that. That's when he kind of really started to break through with his bowling, and the rest is history. And yeah, just started to cement his place almost in the England side. But now he's kind of drifted off a little bit. But
who knows?
Yeah, he's still a class player. Still a class player.
100%. Yeah, I'd go as far as to say an icon. He has been absolutely fantastic for the Spitfires over the years. But Joe, on the flip side of that, we've just spoke there about proudest moments. Of course, 2018 is up there for you. But what do you say has been the toughest moment, personally, for you during your time?
Pretty easy. Broke my ankle in 2019, down in Taunton. The classic footballing injury.
You did a burn.
Yeah, no, ruining that one. At Hampshire, we had a broken leg, Fidel Edwards, my broken ankle, and an Iron Donald's ACL in the space of about 3 or 4 years. And football is now off the charts as a warm up, as much as the boys are hating that because they absolutely love it in the morning of a game. But no, broke my ankle. I shouldn't really say this, but we didn't think it was broken at the time, and we were really struggling in the game. And it was one of those games where I was off the field, but I had to go back on to try and save the game in the fourth innings. I had to go back on to field to allow me to then go out and bat in the fourth innings. So I think I took a slip catch as well, and
that's pretty impressive.
Remember being in pretty bad pain, and then we got beaten quite easily, and I actually wasn't required to bat, but and then we x-rayed it and it was broken, and it was like, bugger, that's not good. That was 2019, so I missed the second half of that season. And then what, with COVID last year, it was almost a year without playing a first class game, so it was a bit of a surreal year. But that was definitely sort of a dark moment, but I think it's made me better in the long run.
Good attitude.
Very much so. And you know, injuries like that, as you say, there could be really, really tough moments. How did you kind of, I don't know how to phrase it like that,
just disappointment? Yeah,
yeah,
I
that, mean, I yeah, that remember, disappointment, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really had a break from the game, to be honest. Like, although I was still quite a young player, I hadn't had a break. And at the time, you don't want to miss any cricket. You know, it was absolutely like heart-wrenching, and to have an operation and stuff. Looking back now, honestly, I think every player has got to go through, whether it's an injury or just a hiccup, just to have that perspective and just realise just how thankful you are. It also gave me just time to look at my game to try and improve. Honestly, wouldn't change it for the world, and I would never have thought that when I did it. But just that time to reflect and chill out, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting take. It really is. And you mentioned there about players having to face that adversity, because of course cricket, we all know, we spoke so many times on the podcast to guests about the roller coaster nature of the game. Of course, you have peaks, troughs, you have fantastic moments and really low moments as well. Joe, how do you actually maintain an even keel in your cricketing game? Are there any maybe like release strategies that you have, any coping mechanisms per se, which you utilize to keep in a good headspace while you're out there playing cricket?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. I think, especially being an opening batter, like fail probably more than anyone in the game, especially, of course, yeah. You know, those like pre-season or early season games in England, like it is challenging. I'm quite lucky. I'm not an angry type. I don't throw kit. I don't throw the toys out the pram. Well, yeah, definitely not publicly, maybe privately, but yeah, no, I just, getting away from the game, I just find key. I'm a big golfer. Just those days off are just, you know, so important, just to, you know, just get that balance back, spending time with sort of mates or family that would, you know, give anything to play professional sport, helps. But equally, like, the county season is really long and tough, and at times it's kind of tough to have that perspective and to get off the train track, if you like. So it is challenging, but ultimately it is the nature of the game. And, you know, we've played a lot of the game, so we know that it's kind of part and parcel, you know, failing. I'm not going to score 100 every game. So kind of used to that. I think actually it's a really good game for just life perspective, just recovering from setbacks, enjoying your teammates' success, your own success. But failure is obviously a big part of cricket and a big part of life, I guess.
It is, and it's an excellent point to make, and I know it does seem a bit profound per se, but you have to accept failure sometimes in cricket, because if everyone went out there, scored 100 every time, if every bowler took 5 wickets, if everybody finished their season with 1,000-plus runs and 100-plus wickets, the game would be boring. There wouldn't really be a game. There wouldn't be the ebbs and flows that we associate with the game of cricket. So sometimes you have to accept that it's going to be the other guy's day. You're going to get bowled out for a low total. You're going to get absolutely hammered in the field, for example. But it's about picking yourself up, dusting yourself down, and really coming back and showing that fortitude. And that's why I really like that passage there, Joe, because it did remind me a lot of The Edge, which is a fantastic documentary, of course. And you see guys like Peterson, you see guys like Cook, Strauss, Trott, for example, Ian Bell, and these guys would have tremendous lows. But then you see them at their best, and it just reminds you just how brilliant not only they are as cricketers, but the game itself as well. And the key thing for any young cricketers to really learn from this podcast is that don't let your failures define you. And I'm guessing, Joe, you would agree with that sentence and sentiment per se, because the real greats, look at Rahul Dravid, for example, he's remembered as the Wall. He's one of the greatest ever cricketers, the fourth leading test run scorer of all time. He got out for ducks. He was trapped LBW. He got clean bowled plenty of occasions. And yet we still remember him as one of the greatest. So, Joe, what's your take on that as a sentiment per se?
Yeah, no, 100%. That's personally, like, put simply, why I play the game, just to have success in a team environment, winning, and to do well. That sort of beer after the changing room is absolutely at the core of, like, why I, and I think a lot of people probably play the game. Just those days are just 10 times better knowing the days that you have had. And don't get me wrong, first class cricket is really tough. Mm-hmm. So it makes those days like even more special, for sure.
Yeah. Well, it is. Yeah. It's professional cricket at the end of the day. And just one final thing about the psychological pressures associated with the game, Joe. What are your experiences with social media? Or like when you've had a bad knock, for example, where you've had a fantastic knock, how would you describe your interactions with social media?
Yeah, I find it tough. I find it easier now than when I first came into like the first team environment. I am on social media. I don't offer a whole lot. some would say I don't offer a whole lot anyway. But I try and keep a low profile. But you do, like when you make your debut in your first few games, you want to read everything, and you want to, you know, you're a fan. So, you know, I would follow Hampshire Cricket on Twitter, and you know, you see some of the replies. You can't help yourself. You want to look at the good and the bad and just everything that people sort of say about you. But I think that's a bit of a stage. And in your sort of young playing career, I can understand that. Now, sort of, as I mature, you just sort of get to just take it with a pinch of salt. They want the club to do well. They want you to do well. You sort of learn to just trust your support bubble of your teammates, your friends and family, and just to, you know, you can never really win. And I might read it now, I might not. I'm not really bothered. Don't really concern myself too much with it. But I think you do have to have some awareness and some strategy to sort of deal with it, especially as you go up the levels and potentially play for England. Like, it's just such a huge part now because of the way of the modern world, recognizing it and having like a strategy to deal with it is so important, because there are some pretty disgusting people on there.
Yep, there certainly are. And that's the thing with social media. It's part and parcel, unfortunately. It's you've got positive.
And also just to add on that, like, I don't blame like members, fans, supporters for having an opinion. That's what makes it great. Like, it's fantastic that you know, that's what makes the game go round in terms of the supporters, and it's fantastic that they feel so passionately about the club. And there are no doubt more, 90% supporters and 10, you know, maybe less than 10%, you know, people that you can sort of take or leave or you'd block. But actually, it's, you know, it's nice when you do well. You get a load of messages. And to go a step further, you know, if you're not doing well, those people that reach out to you when you're struggling a little bit, that's awesome as well. So,
absolutely. Very nicely put. And that's the thing with social media. It is a trade-off, isn't it? Because there are some fantastic aspects. Of course, this podcast may not have been possible without social media. It's pretty incredible to think that, actually, that this was actually concocted on social media itself. Myself and Joe met because of Instagram. And of course, Joe, we got in contact with you on Twitter. So that social media, this podcast today, may not have been possible. But then at the same time, as you mentioned, not everyone is lovely. Not everyone's your best fan. They're not your number one supporter. You are going to get people who revel in failure. But the key thing with social media, you just have to, I suppose, drown them out in a way. And whether for some people that'll be muting them, blocking, whatever. But I mean, for some people, what you just have to realise is that you don't actually do it for them. And you mentioned there about supporters, support network. They're the people that you play for, and of course yourself. So they're the opinions which really should matter. And for me personally, I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to sit here and act as though I get tons and tons of hateful messages. But sometimes you do get the odd one, okay? And it's got to the point where it's just like, they just don't bother me. Because at that point, like, I'm not doing it for you, am I, mate? You're actually wasting your time, okay? You're coming and visiting me. You're increasing my followers and interactions. So I don't really mind. But yeah, it's interesting with regards to social media. And this podcast, again, we talk about the pressures associated with the game. Because, of course, it's not just a physical game. It's a mental game as well. And I think it is just important from time to time to shine the light on that and to understand a cricketer's perspective from a fan's view, really, in terms of what the fans offer, in terms of what the fans say and do on social media. So, yeah, Joe, I'm glad that you were so open and honest about that. So, it's very refreshing to hear, to say the least.
And do you know what? Like that news the other day about fans coming back soon is just music to our ears. Like, it's fantastic. Course. Like, that's what... last year was great that we could get some cricket in, but you know, especially the T20s, like it was
not,
we'd love to have the fans in. Jeez, like it's not the same. And you guys obviously don't want to watch live streams. You know, it's a pretty sterile environment, especially these big stadiums where there's just no one there. It feels like you can hear like echoes and stuff. So that news the other day was brilliant, and just like can't wait to have fans back, and hopefully a lot of fans sort of May, June and for the Blast and the 100 as well.
100%. Yeah. We can't wait. We really can't. The optimism is building, obviously cautiously. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but even if I can just go to one or two games. The last time I went to a game, 23rd of September 2019. Oh my word. I think this is the longest that I've been without going to Edgbaston since about 2015. So, yes, long time coming. It's been far too long, but keep the fingers crossed for 2021.
Yeah, without a doubt. And as you say, it's good to raise awareness, really, about, you know, social media and almost trolls that you get on there and the abuse that is given out on there. It is, as you say, horrible. It really is and has no place. But, you know, it's something that, as Aaron said, he's kind of come to live with now, kind of.
It's not even a case of living with. Yeah, it just comes to terms with. They don't bother me. I'm going to be honest. In fact, there's been times, like, I have a good mate of mine. He's called Max Vidonto on YouTube. Just gets to the point where we actually had a thing. We just read through his YouTube comments and just started laughing at them. To be fair, some of them are creative.
Because actually, some of them are quite, yeah.
Do you know what? It's almost quite fun. When we lose a T20, when we get smashed, it is quite funny to go on the Facebook comments. Like that is on the bus home. Just let's have a bit of a giggle and see what Joe Bloggs has got to say about us, because it can be quite amusing. And if you've got that attitude towards it, it's quite good value.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Good advice. Some solid life advice here from all of us at the County Cricket Podcast. Can learn things
without
from this podcast, not just cricket,
doubt.
Also educational.
So let's kind of change the path of the conversation. Then let's talk about some more individual tough moments of your career. Specifically, who is the toughest bowler that you've ever faced in your time at Hampshire?
Oh, good question. It's great to play against so many like good quality overseas players. I always quite enjoy coming up against, you know, like Broad and Anderson, those guys that you almost know how, you've watched them bowl so many times. You sort of, it's like you're dreaming when you're batting against them, because you're like, I know this run up so well. I've seen this ball so many times, and I still nick it. But in terms of like quality operators, I think Simon Harmer at the moment is class. Like he's really tough to face, especially at Chelmsford where it can spin. It's just, yeah, just gets some really good revs on it and gives it a good rip. He's been a real challenge for me and for us the last couple of years. And, you know, he's taken a shed load of wickets in the last sort of two or three years. Apart from that, I remember facing Jimmy Pattinson with a pink ball in a day-night game at Trent Bridge when I was at Kent in 2017, I think, and he was sort of trying to prove his fitness, because he was quite injury prone, wasn't he? He was trying to prove his fitness to the Australian to Cricket Australia, and he had that season with Notts, didn't he? And he just blew everyone away. And I just remember facing him in a pink ball game, and it just being, I mean, people talk about twilight and day-night tests, you know, it's quite hard to see. Well, yeah, I can confirm at 90 mile an hour, it is pretty quick. And I remember just like, I think there's a video of it. I blocked one back off him, and he's a pretty feisty guy, isn't he? He sort of threw it. I was in my crease, and he sort of threw it, and it hit me on the back of the calf. And I just remember thinking, oh God, you're riled up tonight, aren't you? You've got a point to prove. I just remember that spell just being electric. So, yeah.
Should have walked down to him and tried to hit him for six.
Yeah, no, I definitely haven't got. He's definitely got me covered. Like, he's a big boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, class bowler, Jimmy Pattinson, absolutely class bowler. Often goes under the radar.
I agree with that. Yeah,
You know, Australia have obviously a great seam bowling unit, and certainly in the 2019 Ashes, going back onto that, you know, him and Siddle didn't really get as much recognition as they probably deserved.
But they batted well, didn't they?
Siddle
and Pattinson really, really did bowl well. Well, they bowled well at times, and of course, batted well as well. That partnership between Siddle and Smith at Edgbaston, for example.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It was good. We're blessed in county cricket in a way. We do get some fantastic overseas players in. And that's what's another fantastic element. We get to see the likes of Harmer. We get to see the likes of Pattinson. Get to see the likes of Babar Azam, Rashid Khan, for example. Shaheen Sharfridi, a teammate of yours, Joe. And it's just brilliant. And we could wax lyrical about county cricket all night long. But yeah, it is. Say it's fantastic, fantastic domestic setup.
I would say that, like, we had Shaheen Afridi this in, you know, last year with in the COVID T20, and watch out for that guy. Like, he didn't do that well with us. He got a
two of the last game,
four or a hat trick in the last game.
35. Yeah.
Apart from that, didn't do a whole lot. But I remember the first time I saw him bowl was at the Oval. He was warming up just on the side strip, and one of those, just like, everyone just stopped and just watched this guy just bowl these 90 mile an hour left arm swingers.
Weren't there fans in for that game?
Unbelievable risk.
I remember rightly.
Yeah, that's the one.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, there was 1,000 or 2,000. And that was actually really weird. It was one of those pilot events. And it was, I think we got so used to playing in front of no fans. Like, I remember being on the boundary and was getting sort of sledged by, you know, the typical like oval corporate sort of few drinks. Sort of, I just remember thinking, God, I forgot about this. Like, I forgot about playing at Chelmsford, or where you just get abused from the side. And Afridi, he's only young, isn't he? I think he's going to be absolute class.
100%.
Yeah. In all three formats. Sure, in all three formats.
I remember him at Edgbaston, 2019 World Cup, 3 for 28 against New Zealand. The guy is absolutely electric. I know this is a cliche term, but he's someone that you pay your entry fee for. The guy just keeps you on the edge of your seat, in particular if he's bowling against your team. My word, I'm glad that hasn't happened to date so far, but he is absolutely gun. And Joe, just in a similar vein of question, really, who do you say has been the best overseas player that you played with at Hampshire? Because you had some fantastic names over there over the past five seasons. Who do you say stands out?
Honestly, unbelievable. I mean, that one year we had Amla and Stain in the same year. I mean, that is just... I mean, we were lucky we had a bit of a South African influx that year.
Yeah, because you had Amla as well.
We persuaded like a lot of those guys to come, and just what struck me with actually both those two, just how humble, how nice, how willing to help younger guys, how normal they were. And we had a great year that year, and you know, just to have that quality caliber of players, unbelievable. We had a Jinka Rahane in 2019. Again, just that guy's a god in India, and you know, here we are sitting on the bus with him just chatting about playing cards or what we're going to buy at Sainsbury's when we stop at the services. Like, just amazing. I mean, for young players, you know, I've watched those guys play. You know, I mentioned in like post-05 era, just like watching, you know, Stain and Amla, for example, in that amazing South Africa team. Just ridiculous. I think those two and Ajinkya really stand out. But you know, we have been blessed. I think Surrey probably top it, but we have been blessed at Hampshire with some amazing signings. So credit to the management. And it's one of those when they get announced on the WhatsApp group, it's like, wow, okay, that's pretty awesome. Can't wait for that. So yeah, long may that continue.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you just reeled off like three great players there. But one person who I think, well, I know for a fact Hampshire we're going to get and unfortunately didn't end up coming is Nathan Lyon. That, I mean, that would have been another name to add to that list. He is a quality player. So, yeah, as you say, Hampshire's recruitment, especially in overseas, has just been second to none these last few years. It really has. You know, just, well, I mean, we've literally reeled off like four or five players there who are just outrageous. Never mind the Cole Packs.
I know. So, yeah, we
yeah no, I mean, I completely Kyle forgot about Nathan Lyon, Riley? Actually. Absolutely. I mean, Nathan, I mean, you'll know this, Aaron, but obviously with Keith Barker now, we've got someone who creates sort of great rough for Jeeton Patel for years. And that was sort of part of our championship winning plan was, you know, Carl Abbott, Fidel Edwards and Keith Barker. Keith sort of creating some really good like footmarks or just on the off stump of the right hander. And then for Nathan Lyon to just rip it into there. And, you know, that was last year with COVID. And we sort of felt we had a really, really good chance. What with like James Vince, Sam Northeast, Liam Dawson in their prime as well. We felt we were in a really good position last year. And that's not to say we're not in a great place this year, but I think it's unlikely we're going to get Nathan this year. Just Australia seems to be quite strict with their COVID protocols. But I think that's the great thing, certainly with the management at Hampshire, is they seem to have a really clear plan about how to go about having success. And we, you know, we have had over the last decade, we've probably had as much success as most, probably primarily in white ball cricket, but definitely trying to push, you know, Essex and Somerset for that Red Bull success as well.
Oh yeah, 100%. 2019 in particular, and that memorable game at the Rose Bowl with Carl Abbott. I mean, my word, the guy can bowl, can't he? And I remember, I think I went down to the Rose Bowl a couple of days after that. This wasn't for cricket, but I remember just seeing that and thinking, my God, Carl Abbott's just produced history on that wicket there. I mean, what a bowler. And we mentioned there overseas, the Colpacks as well, Riley. Fidel Edwards, who came to us on loan in 2019, got three wickets in his first game against Leicestershire Edgbaston. Yeah, Hampshire have had some absolutely brilliant names. They really have. And Joe, if you had to choose one, I know.
I remember that week that when Carl Abbott was on fire, like 17 wickets. I remember just other people bowling at the other end and just didn't look like getting a wicket, so flat. And then Abbott would sort of come on for another spell and he'd get another wicket. And I remember he came up to the changing rooms and I think he was on about 13 or 14. And he just said to Giles White, our director of cricket, he said, "Chalks, I'm going to be in the hotel tonight. You better book me a room at the Hilton," obviously, with the hotel on the ground. And he had a few beers and he stayed in the hotel. And I think he did some like Sky Sports interviews like that night and the next morning. But just the way he just said, "I'm not going to go home. I'm staying in the hotel tonight. Just book me a room." I think Giles was all too happy to oblige, you know.
Of course, you have to take, was it 17 for 86? They were the figures, weren't they? Pretty sure they were, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. 17 wickets for sure.
And that completely derailed Somerset's hopes as well. That's the unfortunate thing. I mean, I felt terrible for Somerset, but yeah, cracking piece of bowling.
I mean, he got Essex player of the month that month. I don't remember.
There you go. But yeah, what a spell. Absolutely phenomenal. Really, really is. So let's look ahead now, Joe, in your cricketing career. I mean, we'll begin with your personal game. Is there anything in particular you're looking to improve on heading into 2021 or the 2021 season? Is there anything in particular you're specifically looking to work on?
I sort of touched on it with the championship. Like we've got this long ambition. I don't think we've won the championship since the 1970s, I think, which is pretty poor, really, for a club with Hampshire's sort of stature, I think. So that's been a collective focus, and I guess everyone individually is obviously buying into that. To try and just get that championship silverware. So that's a personal work on. But also, you know, trying to develop my T20 game. I didn't get picked up in the 100 this year. It by all accounts sounds like a great comp. And just looking at the draft names yesterday, just some amazing players. That's definitely a goal in sort of years to come. But you know, but also there's those wild card picks that. If you have a good blast, you know, you can still play in that tournament. So I think those are the sort of short-term focuses for me. Yeah, for sure.
As you say, the 100 there is a real, it's a brand new competition. It's obviously a franchise competition. Do you ever look at maybe franchise tournaments elsewhere for in the future as a target that you would like to play in?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you notice with the franchise comps is that guys that go and play in the winter and then come back, just have this confidence that they've played with, you know, some outstanding world's best players. They've practiced with them. They've shared ideas, and they just come back with this sort of, I don't know, confidence of just a bit of a change of scene. They've picked other people's brains, and that's definitely something I want a piece of, like, in years to come, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And we have to follow that up with a choice. If you could choose, we'll start with the league and then a franchise. Who would you want to play franchise cricket for? Who would be the absolute dream team for you, Jay?
Well, I actually love watching the Big Bash. I know the IPL financially is the one. And obviously it's just some star players in that, and it's obviously huge in India. But there's something about the Big Bash over Christmas. Don't know, just the pictures always seem pretty good. It's just on a nice time of day for people in the UK to watch. And it just seems like a great comp. It just seems to really capture the imagination of like Australia and that sort of vibe. I mean, Vincey has played for Sydney Sixers the last couple of years and has, I think, won back-to-back. And he comes back, you know, raving about just, you know, that sort of living in Sydney, sort of travelling a bit. Just seems like a really good competition. So, I mean, love to play in the Big Bash, yeah, for sure. And I'd give my right arm for that.
Fair enough. That's the thing. A lot of county cricketers do like the idea of the Big Bash. What about you, Joe? What do you go for? If you could choose between Big Bash or IPL, I know you love the Big Bash, Melbourne Stars fan, but what would you choose if you could choose any?
Well, you have to take my answer here with a pinch of salt, because obviously I'm not a professional cricketer. So it's going to sound very greedy, but am I getting picked up for a lot of money in the IPL? Because if so, I'm taking that every day of the week.
50 lakh.
Okay, then I'll take the Big Bash, because it was just, I don't know. Just seems
you'd be lucky to get 10.
Obviously.
50's
yeah.
Overspending. I'm just being kind.
Okay, obviously, I'm not going to get a lot of money anyway, but hypothetically, if I was to get a lot of money, then I'd choose the Big Bash. I choose the IPL, but yeah, the Big Bash is just like probably my favourite franchise tournament in the world. Obviously, I support the Melbourne Stars, so that's probably my preferred franchise. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be fussed if I couldn't play for them. But yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I personally go RCB. I'd go IPL all day every day. Don't care about the pay. As I said, 10 lakh, 20 lakh. Just get me in that team alongside Virat Kohli, AB de Villiers. I suppose Glenn Maxwell this season. I know it's obviously this is all in theory, but yeah, 100%. Play at the Chinna's Wami, small boundaries. And so, yeah, just have a good time in India. Just seems like a wonderful place to play cricket. Yeah, I'd choose IPL. But talking away from T20 cricket then, Joe, what about in terms of Red Bull cricket? Because 2021, brand new county championship structure, three-group system. We mentioned it a lot of times here on the podcast, actually. Hampshire in the quote-unquote group of death in this year's county championship. First of all, what do you make of the new structure? And are you in favour of retaining that structure heading into 2022 and beyond?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the structure last year around COVID just worked really well. It just seems just the logical decision to have a regionalised group. And I guess it sort of captured the organisers' imagination as what they could do. Am I in favour of it? It ticks a lot of boxes in terms of everyone can win the county championship. I like that aspect of it. You have cricket in September that means something in terms of playing for the title. Having said that, if you're not in that top group, if you're in, you know, that second or third six, as it were tier, I can see that sort of fading away. But equally, you know, if you're in the middle of Div 2, coming towards the back end, that can be challenging as well. I mean, with two divisions, there's a lot of meaningful matches, I guess, with promotion and relegation and silverware success. But also you can play on like result wickets. You know, as I said, I had that year in Kent in Div 2, and it was definitely a different experience to the experiences I had with Hampshire, where I think Div 1 cricket tends to be played on quite good sort of flat, sort of test match ground wickets, whereas maybe in Div 2, they're sort of, people are hunting for wins and often games finish in sort of 3 days. And, you know, the onus is on wins and losses rather than draws. I'm not too fussed, to be honest. As long as the county championship is preserved and we still play plenty of first class cricket, then I'm happy with that. And actually, it'll be quite cool to go to some different venues. I think we go to Bristol and Grace mm-hmm. Road this year. That'll be cool. Group of Death. Yeah, I guess. But we're also playing at the Overland Lords for 4 days. So that I think that's something when the fixtures come out that certainly Southern County cricketers look to. Are we playing at Lords this year? Have we got a 4 day at Lords? Are we going to get a lunch and tea at the in the dining
room? That's the dream, isn't it? That's the dream.
Absolutely. So we'll see how it works out. I don't know if it's going to last, but one thing I've sort of learned in my brief time in the county game is nothing ever really stays the same with the structure. And I guess as players, you've sort of got to be adaptable and leave those decisions to people above your pay grade. But yeah, absolutely looking forward to a different format for sure.
It's good to hear.
Yeah,
and also a bit about preserving county cricket as well and first class cricket, something which is massively mm-hmm. important. Everyone loves a bit of Red Bull cricket here in England, so yeah,
you can't beat it.
No.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. But having thought about it, I've actually changed my mind. I've spoken a bit about it that I'm in favour of two divisions, but I've actually had a little think about it. I'm not necessarily changed my mind, but I'm a bit more open to three divisions and all this new thing now, because I've realised if there's no more Division 2, no one can win the Division 2 trophy, and that means Lancashire to keep it forever, and we were the last ever winners of it. So I guess in that sense, I'm in favour of keeping the new system. But aside from that, you know, I'm looking forward to getting the tradition back. So maybe they just don't have a trophy for Division 2 anymore because we were the latest winners. But hold us 2 years, no one else can say that. So yeah, no other county can say that, because end of the county will win it in the next year. So yeah, I guess that's pretty unique. But yeah, I mean, there's pretty much just one more thing before we move on to teammates, which is obviously the more fun part of the podcast potentially, and the closing section. And it's a pretty simple question really, Joe. What are your aspirations for the remainder of your county career? What do you really want to achieve, and your career in general?
I think two things stick out. I want to win a county championship, and I want to play for England. As most sort of young players want to. And I think, to be honest, I mean, we talk about preserving the game and the county game. I think that would be pretty universal, like, around the game. I think people would prefer, on the whole, to win the county championship than the Blast or the 50 over comp. Don't get me wrong, it's great, but I just think you get the respect of your teammates. It's just a bit more enduring, a bit more longer lasting when you win the county championship. That sort of is real history. So I'd love to do that, and hopefully we can do that soon at the club. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how'd you say, the county championship is the one that you want to win, isn't it? You know, it's like the pinnacle of English domestic cricket. And I think, as you say, if you asked anyone, or maybe, you know, most cricketers in England, what would they want to win the most? I reckon the county championship would be up there. For me, if I was to have a chance at winning one, it would be that for me. So, yeah, I mean, it would definitely be interesting. But yeah, that pretty much brings us to the end of the first part of the podcast. So before we kind of end things off, we do, of course, have teammates. So, Joe, you know how teammates works, right? You've seen our soccer AM, so you're familiar with how it works?
Yep.
Yep. All right, cool. So let's get straight into it then. So the first question is, in the Hampshire dressing room, who has the best nickname?
The best nickname? That is a good question. God, that stumped me, actually. Okay, so I'll go with Ian Holland. I don't know if he told you this, actually.
He may have done.
He's nicknamed Dingo, which was...
He did not.
He didn't. No. Okay, great. Well, I'm glad I can bring this up. He's nicknamed Dingo, which was from, I believe, his time with Victoria. I think he was a young player with Victoria, and he was at the... I think it was a presentation night, as I say, like, young player. And he was posing for pictures with, you know, with teammates, with girlfriends, and people were just laughing at him. So he says, people were just sort of giggling at him, and he couldn't work out what was going on. And it was only later in the evening that he realized he had on his shoulder pretty much like most of the evening. And So he coined the nickname Dingo in Victoria. And I think he kept it pretty quiet when he came over to England to the county game. But a few of us have gone over to Melbourne, which is his sort of home in the winter, and just sort of picked up on some of his mates were calling him Dingo or Dingo. And we've managed to drag that into the Hampshire changing room. So that's a pretty good one.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's the best backstory we've had, I reckon, to a nickname. Like, comfortably, that is a story. Like, that is a proper story. Normally, it's just like based on where they grew up or something. That is a proper story. There's a proper story to that. So, yeah, wow. And what about yours? I feel like we have to address yours.
Yeah, Lord.
Ian Holland mentioned yours. Yeah, Lord.
Lord.
Another sort of brief story. When I was in the 19s, we worked with, I don't know if you remember, Simon Guy, former Yorkshire keeper. Proper, like, tough, mm-hmm. you know, proper northerner. Really, like, good guy. Like, love him to pieces. But he took the piss out of me being, you know, this sort of southerner, middle class, posh accent. And he basically called me the Lord. And I managed to sort of keep it with the England under-19s for a period of time. And then a few guys, I think Jimmy Adams started working, doing some coaching work with the nine, brought it back to Hampshire. And there was a period where I sort of opposed it and tried to fight it. And now it's definitely stuck. So I've just got to just learn to absorb it and accept it. So, yeah, Lord.
Well, to be fair, it's not the worst nickname, is it?
They could be worse.
They could be much worse. Yeah, they could be a lot worse ones. So moving on to our next question then, Joe. Who do you say is the teacher's pet at Hampshire County Cricket Club? Who's always hanging around the coaches?
The Parch. Do you listen to the Peter Crouch podcast? Parch. Always hanging around the coaches.
Yep.
That's a really tough one to answer, just because he probably threw me under the bus. I'm going to go with Ian Holland. Do you know what? He's a great professional and a really good guy, and just works really hard at his game. So he looks for feedback from the coaches. I wouldn't say he's a teacher's pet, but he's definitely the player that I would want as a coach.
Teacher's pet isn't the worst of, like,
oh no!
Worst one to be nominated as, is it really? There's worse.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
as we may find out in a bit. But the next one then, who is the best at karaoke? Or the best singer?
Karaoke best singer maybe. Is comfortably, maybe not best singer. Brad Taylor, off spinner, sort of all rounder, loves getting up on the karaoke. As I say, we went to Barbados for a few pre-seasons and the hotel would run a karaoke, I think it was every, like, Tuesday and Thursday, and he would loves his music, definitely backs himself for some classics. So he, whilst he might not be the best singer and probably wouldn't say he's a great singer, he'd love a bit of karaoke for sure.
Fair enough. It's well, I say it's not about the voice, at least as long as it doesn't sound like a cat's being dragged.
Yeah, I think it's just about the confidence. It's just the confidence.
It's karaoke. Yeah, it's not
something
the voice,
I haven't got.
Yeah. What about your physio? Yeah. What about your physio, Joe? We heard quite a good story from Ian.
He had a beauty. Chocolate salty balls. I think I actually wasn't there. I think I was injured, but he. I think the boys had a good 4-day win in Taunton and had a pretty good karaoke night. He's a good character. You always need like a good support staff, like character wise, just to have a bit of fun with. But beauty.
Yeah. And for the listeners out there, if you don't know the backstory behind that, just go and listen to the Ian Holland podcast. Absolutely hilarious. Yeah. Really was. Moving on to our next one then, Joe. Who is the team DJ at Hampshire and what kind of tunes do they play?
I think we probably have two. Brad Taylor, as I mentioned, would be one. He loves his music. Carl Abbott sort of took over when he came to the club. I think he was master of fines with South Africa, but he sort of took over fines with the club and he sort of took over DJ. There's a lot of sort of South African, I don't know how to describe South African music. It's just very alternative, like Afrikaans. It's actually pretty decent, but it does. It's sort of a bit of a foot tapper. It's one of those where you think you know the words, but you don't, and you sort of
kind of mumble along.
A bit of a mumbler and a bit of a sort of But he, yeah, no, he's been in charge in the last couple of years. So, yeah.
Fair enough. The next one. Now, this applies for anything on a cricket field that requires it. Who has the best celebration?
Good question. I mean, we have Fidel Edwards. I mean, Fiddy's been at the club for a good 5-6 years. He loves a celebration. Just he has the old like Encina, hand in front of the face, doesn't he? Yeah. That he's sort of synonymous with his West Indies. That he only brings out like if he's bowled like a rapid Yorker or a rapid bouncer or something. But sometimes it's pretty hard to catch him. I was on the professional staff when Matt Coles took a wicket and sort of belly slided across the square. Yeah. Like he's a pretty big unit as it is, but he just went for the full like belly slide, which was pretty class actually.
Yeah, I think I've seen that before. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
It was. What about you? What's your, if you get 100, what's your favourite celebration?
I'm an absolute bore. I'm an Alistair Cook, just sort of
just take your helmet off like that.
Photographer's nightmare, just trying to keep it pretty low profile. I'm not a big fan of being in the opposition when someone goes ballistic, like fair play, but keep it pretty muted, I think.
Is that something that could change in 2021 though?
I mean, where'd you go with it? It's tough.
Lap around the
ground.
If
I get 100 in the first 4 or 5 weeks when there's no one there, I think it'd be a little bit odd on the live stream if I'm just like doing laps around
go and kiss the camera
around the Aegeus bar, but there's no.
Do Wayne Rooney?
Yeah, could do. That would take a while to get up to the 26th stand
We saw that this summer. Oh my days!
If you know why, after Joe Weatherly gets a ton and play stops for, I don't know, 5 minutes, and then you see him appear in front of your screen, you know why.
Kissing the lens like Rooney. You know why.
Moving on. Play just gets a bit boring and you've got out, just go and put your face in front of the camera or something.
Oh, brilliant. Moving on to our next one then. Again, a bit of a new one, but it's becoming a firm classic now on TCCP. Who's the kit man's nightmare at Hampshire? Who always lays their kit everywhere in the dressing room?
Sam Northeast by a long way. He is. I think I'm pretty much at the opposite end of the changing rooms to him. But I just find like his gloves just like in my spot. I'm like, how has this got here? An absolute mess. He has this thing.
He's through when he gets out.
No, he's just an absolute messy. He's not even an angry like when he's got out. He's just an absolute messy. I don't know if it's something to do with, he went to Harrow private school, maybe boarding, just used to having his stuff everywhere. But he is proper messy. And he has this thing where his kit is just, he'll wear like playing kit with a bit of training kit with an old playing jumper. And it's just like that just doesn't, that's not our kit. Like you're just wearing whatever you pick up this morning, like absolute mess.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, maybe he needs to be relegated somewhere different. Has he got a good seat in the dressing room? Like, does he have one of the prime seats?
To be fair, he's got a corner, which is probably best for someone, for a messy bloke. So I think we'll keep him that way. Yeah,
fair enough.
Instead of in the middle. Oh, my word. Be everywhere.
The next one. Who is... Now, this is a two-part question. Who are the best and the worst dressed in Hampshire's side?
Well, worst is easy, isn't it? Worst I can deal with first. There's probably two. There's Tom Allsop, who sort of rocks the designer Gucci, like, what do you call them? Like sliders and jeans and stuff. And it's just like, on an away trip, you know, who's putting that much effort to go out to Nando's and just wear that sort of gear? But we also had Jimmy Adams has not changed his dress sense for, I think since he was probably a kid. Like he wears these baggy jeans, the same t-shirts that always crop up on the same away trip, and it's the boys have a good laugh because he doesn't give two shits about what he comes across in or what he looks like, but it gives the boys a good giggle. Best dressed, I mean, I don't want to compliment my teammates too much.
You can give it to yourself if you want.
No way, I would never do that. Phil Edwards is pretty cool with the chain get up, like often like good caps, good jewelry. Something that like we could never pull off, but just that Caribbean flair, like he's got down to a T. So that's always pretty cool.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Jimmy Adams. We've had Tom on the podcast. We've had Tom Allsop, obviously yourself, Liam Dawson, and Ian. All four of you have said Jimmy Adams for that category.
I think that's a runaway.
It's a pretty famous sort of. It's a good source if we're having a tough week and we're getting battered. It's a good source for giggle on an away trip when Jimmy comes down for dinner, wearing his bootleg baggy jeans with like Stans. You know those like Stan Smith sleeks that you wear for school PE. It's that sort of stuff.
Oh dear,
not ideal.
It's not, but you know what? At that point, you just don't care, do you? It's like that's your style. Just style.
No, and that's great, and that's part of the fun of it because he gets involved. But good crack.
Absolutely. Moving on to our next one, bringing a classic TCCP teammates question back to the forefront. Who's the biggest badger in the Hampshire dressing room?
Mason Crane. Yeah, I don't know what it is about spinners and leg spinners. They're just a bit different, aren't they? Just
know everything.
They just know, yeah. Mason, I'd say knows 98% of like playing squad numbers, like other teams' numbers. He'll say, "Oh, you know, Luke Wells is this number for Sussex, or Tim Bresnan at Warwickshire is this number." And for me, that is just mind blowing that he knows those sort of numbers. He loves it. I mean, we've all got a little bit of badger in us, haven't we? But from my experience, spinners seem to just be up a notch a little bit.
Yep.
Fair enough. Maybe he's going to start extending that knowledge, that number knowledge, out to international cricket now. Obviously, been with England for quite an extensive period of time, so he probably knows a lot of, definitely England players and probably India and Sri Lanka players' numbers as well now, so... Yeah, maybe you have to quiz him on that when he gets back, when he's see him. But the penultimate one then. Now, this is a bit of probably a sad one for you because you said you don't do this anymore. But I'm going to ask anyway. Who is the best footballer?
Best footballer would be hands down James Vince, probably. To be fair, all the senior lads are pretty good. James Vince, Liam Dawson, Chris Wood would all bat themselves as the best footballer and would be a source of a serious fight between the three of them as to who was the best. But James Vince is definitely one of those that's, you know, he's your first pick. If you're one of the captains, you want Vince in your team. The only thing with Vincey is he'll try and do it all. So you tell him.
I was about to say, he's a selfish player.
Yeah. And he will be like, he'll just drop deep to get the ball, but then he'll want to score the goals. He'll be everywhere. Like his heat map would be all over the place. But to be fair, like, yeah, he is better than the rest of us. So he's probably earned the right.
It's always the England lads, isn't it? Who are the best at football.
It is. Yeah, always. Because you play with high-quality players with England. Play with high-quality players.
They've got techers, haven't they, the England lads?
England players are good, yeah.
Yeah.
England players are seriously good.
So, I do wonder why, though, sometimes. Like, it's weird. Like, literally every single one of the England lads seems to be decent at football. Who knows?
Maybe if the rest of us start playing more football, we'll play for England and be a bit better at cricket. I don't know.
Maybe that's the secret.
Maybe it's correlated. Yeah.
We've just cracked the code. We've done it, lads. We've done it on tonight's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. But moving on to our last question of today's podcast then, Joe. Again, this is a contentious one. And I suppose as a Hampshire player, quite an apt one because you've got an on-site golf course. Who do you say is the best golfer at Hampshire County Cricket Club?
Sean Irvine was for a period, and he's actually trying to be a pro since he retired.
Instagram.
So he's off scratch, or maybe a bit better than scratch. So he was the lads still play with him a little bit, but he was serious. Loves his golf. To be fair, the whole changing room love their golf. Ryan Stevenson went to American College to play golf. And didn't quite work out with him. He chose cricket in the end, and he actually hardly plays anymore, which is really frustrating. The lads are always like really keen to get him out on the golf course, but he just doesn't want a piece of it. But I'd say all bar maybe three or four players play. So it's quite good at the moment. After training, just going over to the golf course, a few of us are members at clubs. Like, it's a good source of just relaxing. Like, you can play a bit of golf and not talk about cricket, chill out. Hopefully the weather's half decent. And love my golf. So can't wait till those golf courses can open in what is it, 4 or 5 weeks' time? Yeah.
It'll be nice that, won't it? Driving ranges as well. That'll be very, very nice. You mentioned there about three or four bad players, though. Okay, we'll swap that then, because there seems to be quite a decent bunch of golfers at Hampshire. Who's the worst?
That's a good question. But do you know that the worst, they just don't like to involve themselves with it. So they'll always sort of pretend as though like they're just not interested. So Mason Crane would be in that bracket. Sam Northeast, Keith Barker. Those are the sort of players that on your team golf day, they'll be busy. They don't want a piece of it. I can't do it, so I'll drive the buggy. I don't really want to be involved. But shame on them.
To be fair, in Keith's defence, he's much more of a footballer. Because he used to play professional, didn't he, Keith Barker? He had some techers.
Well, that is... Do you know what? That's true. I didn't think of that with the footballing shout. But he's such a big lump now that he can only be a hoof it up top and knock it down sort of striker. And he will hate me for saying that. But he just hasn't got that movement anymore. So, interesting one.
Oh, it's a shame. We'd have to talk with Keith on the podcast about that, because he's had a very interesting journey into cricket in general.
He'd be a great guest. Great. Yeah. He's a great man. He'd be a great, great guest. And he had some good stories.
100%. But yeah, Joe, that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast then. So before we leave today's episode, do you have just any kind of closing words, any final things, social media channels to promote, for example?
No, just thanks for having me on. Really, really enjoyed it. I was a bit nervous about the final few questions, just if I'd have the answers, but I think managed to come through all right. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to having you guys and fans and supporters on the back in the grounds in the summer. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. I am on social media, as I say. I don't offer a lot, so don't feel obliged to follow me, but I think it's JJ Weatherly or Joe_Weatherly or something like that. That'd be awesome. Yeah, thanks guys.
Well, yeah, we'll leave those social media channels down in the podcast description on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Podbean. But yeah, Joe, just before we do end, thank you very much for coming on tonight. It's been an absolute privilege. It really has been fantastic talking through your cricketing journey and, of course, some very, very funny stories in that teammate segment. I must admit that did make me laugh tonight. But yeah, just from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast, thank you very much for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure. And of course, to the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.